Hello, everyone. This is Mike Rohde for the Sketchnote Army podcast. Before we get started in this episode of the podcast, I wanted to mention we've got a new clothing line we're releasing that gives you an opportunity to support Sketchnote Army, the website, the newsletter, and the Sketchnote Army podcast. If you go to sketchnotearmy.com/t-shirts, you'll see this variety of t-shirts that we have to offer. It's men's and women's cut t-shirts in 5 different colors, as well as a heavy-duty hoodie in 5 different colors. So you've got quite a variety to choose from. All the purchases that you make of these t-shirts and sweatshirts will support Sketchnote Army, the newsletter, the website, and of course this podcast, and help pay for all the costs that it takes to put these out for you. So if you'd like to go there and check it out, this is a way to support the Sketchnote Army. It's a way to make a statement about your being a sketchnoter, and these can make great gifts as well for those in your life that you know do sketchnoting and would like to have something that would be kind of cool and different that will get people to notice. So go check it out and support the Sketchnote Army at sketchnotearmy.com/t-shirts. And now, on with the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sketchnote Army podcast. I'm Mike Rohde, the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook, and I am so excited to invite my friend and Sketchnote Workbook contributor, A.V. Crofts, or Anita Verna Crofts.
Hey, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on.
This is great to have you here, and I think it's going to be a fun discussion. People are going to want to be doing some new things based on this discussion, I think, and I'm just so glad that you're here to share some time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So why don't we start off in the way we start all these podcasts off and give some context. I love context. I think context is so important to understand things. So to do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and where you live, whatever kind of contextual stuff you think will help people as we have a discussion to understand who you are.
Okay. No, I'd be happy to. So I am a member of the faculty at the University of Washington in Seattle, and I teach in the Department of Communication. And in particular, I teach in a graduate program where we have two tracks. One is the Master of Communication in Digital Media, and the other track is a Master of Communication in Communities and Networks. And the courses that I contribute to the curriculum involve leadership and creativity, how we look at communication in the context of leadership and creativity and community making. And then this year I actually offered a new class, it was new for me, that I was really excited about, on auditory storytelling, looking at everything from the advent of radio up into the real birth of podcasting. So those are two of the kinds of courses that I teach, and I'm also an author, and I split my time between Seattle, where the University of Washington is, and in the summers, I am very lucky to get to call Portland, Maine home. So I am a bi-coastal educator, I guess you could say that.
Wow, you're a jet-setting educator, I guess, as well, right? By necessity.
I'm very, very fortunate that I live in the era of telecommuting. It was something that I pitched to my chair and to the director of my graduate program when I was hired 6 years ago. And I said, look, here we are with a graduate program where we emphasize the potential of digital media and the potential of the connectivity that we now experience. And so what would you guys say about me piloting working remotely from Maine? And they were wonderfully supportive. And it's really been a way for me to model what we actually talk about in the class. So it works out well for everybody.
Well, that's fantastic. And I'm a strong believer in remote work. I did it for 10 years working for working with and for Europeans. And even in my current situation, I like to take time and work from home or other locations. I've sort of 10, 15 years ago, just sort of became a laptop person. And it would be hard for me to imagine sitting at a desktop and not being able to unplug that thing and go someplace. So I can relate to the way you think. And that's really cool that the school was open to that arrangement.
Absolutely. And I think that it's wonderful to have a chance to see a place with new eyes, even though these are two cities that I know very well, two states that I know very well. There's always there's a sense of newness when you return. And I've done a lot of travel, both domestically and internationally. And we'll talk a bit more about that because I think that's very related to why I love sketchnoting. But that idea of looking at the world with the eyes of a traveler is really important to me. And in some ways, splitting my time the way that I do with the academic year in Seattle and then having my summers in Portland and beyond in Maine keeps me in that travel mode, which I love, because there's always something new to explore. There's always something new to see. And these are very familiar places, but you keep them fresh in that way.
I think it must also encourage your creativity. I think being a visitor in a new place, even if it's a place that is your place, but you haven't been there for 6 or half the year, 6 months or something, that sort of coming back after being gone for a while and seeing like, wow, that suddenly that thing is there, or suddenly that thing is gone, or seeing something unusual that you don't see typically in your normal routine in the other place could be sort of a creativity booster in some senses.
Absolutely. Your antenna are up, you're observing, and you also, you derive different things from different environments that you live in. And the space that I have in Seattle, my mug that I drink my tea out of in the morning, that's Seattle. And then I get to change that when I come back to Portland, and I'm on a different bicycle than I have in Seattle. And I get to have, in some cases, more rural experiences when I'm in Maine than I do in the more metropolitan and frantic urban experience of Seattle. So there's a downshift that happens for me. And it's not just the environment, but it's also the time of year. I mean, summertime is when we do tend to shift our focus a bit. And I'm fortunate that in the rhythm of academia, the summer is a chance for me to be more reflective, to think more long-term and strategically about the work that I'm doing. So that's also reflected in where I choose to call my home at that time too.
Well, that's really fascinating. And I've been actually pondering taking some kind of a shorter break myself, like going somewhere and taking maybe a day or a weekend just to kind of reflect on where my life's going and where I want to go next year. I haven't done this yet, but I have friends who've done silent retreats and other retreats. So I would imagine the same kind of dynamic is happening when you go and you're being strategic in Maine in the summer, and it sort of lets you sort of have a different mind space there. And I'd be kind of curious to hear your thoughts on how could we, the listeners, sort of be creative in ways that we can do that in our own lives. It's just, that's something that popped up in my mind, even though this is a sketchnoting podcast. I think the podcast that we do is actually about the people of sketchnoting and about lives and how we can make our lives better. So maybe give us some ideas, if you happen to have any, of what are some creative ways we could maybe integrate like a little traveler's mind shift into everyday life, on a shorter scale, like maybe not a whole summer, but maybe it's a weekend or a day. Do you have any thoughts or ideas about that?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's not really the length of time. It's the attitude that you go with, that taking a ferry ride in Seattle to an island that I've not been to, or that I haven't been to in 10 years, or even just deciding to walk to the store a different way and seeing a street and having a new experience, even in your own backyard. I think that there are so many opportunities that don't involve a passport, that don't involve, as you say, a long time away, that we can create these mini sabbaticals for ourselves, or even just these experiences that we find very normal if we're in a new city where we've got a map out, we're having to navigate. I think we can create those same experiences when we're in neighborhoods that we know very well by just being intentional and thinking about, okay, today I'm going to go this direction, or I'm going to take an opportunity to explore a new neighborhood. I mean, I remember when I'd lived in Seattle for about 10 years, and there were two friends of mine, the three of us decided we were going to do new neighborhood excursions. And we did probably about 5 or 6. So we were already very established Seattleites. I mean, we knew the city. We certainly weren't newcomers. But Seattle is one of those cities that's built on a number of hills. There's a very strong neighborhood component to the city. And so what we would do is we would take an evening and we would go to a neighborhood with the intention of really treating it as a new destination. We didn't plan in advance what we were going to do. We followed our bliss to a great extent. And if there was a shop that looked interesting, or a cafe or a restaurant, we would pop in. We would always try to go to a couple different places over the course of an evening. And it was wonderful because it took a sense of familiar space, but it made it feel like we were having this neighborhood adventure, when we really built it around that sense of discovery. And so I think that can be done even in these places that we've called home for many years. So I think back really fondly on that. And there was, as I said, a level of intentionality about it, and And if I can draw a thread between that kind of intentionality and what I love about sketchnoting is also that there's a level of intentionality that you are taking the time to put pen in your hand, whether it's analog or digital, and actually translate something that you are either seeing or hearing onto a page in the form of a visual note. So I think that love that word intentionality is very relevant in this conversation about how you make a place new and how you also take concepts and document them in a way that helps you make sense of them and then also helps you retain them.
And I think we as sketchnoters probably have the advantage of being able to do both and tie them together. So you can take a day and spend it in a different neighborhood that you're not typically used to or don't know much about, and then turn that into a sketch note as a way to cement that memory and to really maybe reflect on how that's different than your normal, you know, experience. And maybe it makes you want to go back to those places and, or to suggest to someone, hey, you should go check out this neighborhood. It's pretty cool. There's this and this and that. Here's my sketch note.
Absolutely. There's something about having a pen in my hand, and I use a reporter's notebook design, if that makes sense. It opens mm-hmm. up. And there's something that makes you feel like you are on an adventure when you have those kinds of items in your hand. There's a documentation that's happening. It's that sense that you are out and about, and that this is a tool that allows you to capture that information in a way that I think adds a heightened sense of you're on a journey. Whether or not you're in a place that you know well or not, you are still documenting something. And I just love the kind of emotional reaction that I have when I'm actually holding those kinds of tools in my hands.
It sort of changes the way you think, I think, in some senses. And I've noticed too that even the pens or the books that or the paper or the whiteboards, like the different tools that I use, like the principles and the way that I approach things are similar. But the way they get expressed, the process by which I work through them actually changes a little based on the tool that I'm using, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it that way before.
Oh, yeah. I can see that. That's really interesting how you describe that. Perhaps it's not that the process changes entirely, but the tools matter. And I mean, I think of, you know, drawing a parallel to the kitchen. I mean, depending on what it is you're making, mm-hmm. what knife are you going to choose? What pan is appropriate? How are you going to plate it? And thinking about the matching the tool to the task, but you have a selection. It's not that there's only one knife that's going to work, but it depends on what you feel like that in that particular moment. And then that changes the way you approach the task.
Interesting. So I'm very curious about, I've seen you go by the term, and we mentioned at the outset, A.V. Crofts, and we know that your name is Anita Verna. So I'm curious about what is the history of the A.V. Crofts? Was there a reason for that abbreviation, and what was the purpose that it served, if so?
Yeah, there was. And this goes back to 2004. And by that point, I'd been using my full name, Anita Verna Crofts, professionally for over a decade. And that was important to me because my great-grandmother's name is Verna. I was very aware of her legacy, and I liked the cadence of having those three names. And so that was something that was already part of my identity. And then in 2004, I was at the University of Washington, but I was really keen to begin writing about let's put it this way. I was really keen to start to have a career where I was actually able to write. And I had this, you know, it's one of those situations, Mike, where I wanted to write. I'd just taken a round the world trip. I had been at the University of Washington for about 7 years, had left a position there and bought a round the world ticket. And during that round the world ticket experience, which went on for about 9 months, I was experimenting with blogging. I had just gotten a blog through Blogger. It was 2002, 2003. So on the earlier side, certainly not an earliest adopter of blogging, but it was one of those situations where I wanted to keep in touch with folks at home, but instead of that laborious process of sending out mass emails, I thought, well, I could just update a blog and then work that direction. So I came back to Seattle very enthusiastic about the writing process. And when I looked back over what it is that I tended to write about when I was traveling, food absolutely rose to the top. And it was right around this time in 2004 that I saw an ad for a food editor position at a local magazine in Seattle. And I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to start to write for them and to start to be able to take that joy that I felt in the first person narrative around a food experience and actually actually now have an outlet to publish it with. And that, of course, brought forward the question, well, what are you going to publish under? What's the name you're going to use? And I decided at that time, I talked with my editor, and I decided that I was going to start publishing as A.B. Crofts. So I was going to use my initials. And the overwhelming reason for that is that I wanted to create a very gender-neutral moniker. I didn't want it to be very clear who I was and in the writing. And it wasn't that I was trying to be subversive or covert. It's more that I felt that in a society that still, while we are happily changing the way that we look at that binary sense of gender, I just thought it was nice to take that off the table, to let that be an air of mystery, and not, as I said, to deceive, but more to allow the words to speak for themselves without that layer of expectation as to why would this person be writing that through the lens of gender. Mm-hmm. And I think also I'd spent some time on my round the world trip in India, and I was really charmed at how many authors in India used initials. It really struck me. There were a lot of Indian authors I was encountering that used initials, and I think it actually came out of the academy in India as well. And I found it charming. And so it was that combination of appreciating the gender neutrality, and also it was a bit of a nod to just my love of that country, of India, and so many of the authors that I encountered.
Interesting. And it's funny that you said take it off the table. That was exactly as you were describing that, what was coming into my mind. It wasn't so much that you're trying to hide behind anything. It's just like, this is, you're focusing in the wrong space. Look at the words, look at the experience. Don't worry, like, why does it matter? You know, that perspective of what my actual name is.
That's right.
You know, that's an interesting way to refocus the direction of, you know, where to look. And it's funny too that your experience of naming in that way. I think it's a travel writer named V.S. Naipaul, I think is his name. So yes. That popped in my head. And I also know, it seems like the turn of the century in England, it was really, really popular to do this, to abbreviate your first and second initial. Or even, so you might do like A. Verna Crofts, right? It was kind of an interesting dynamic of that time. It must have just been popular or something. I don't know why. Maybe they, back in the letterpress days, you know, it was expensive to use another letter, so they, you know, shortened it up. Or I'd be kind of curious to see why that became a fad or a fashion of the time.
Oh, but absolutely. And definitely. And now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, oh, I wonder about the relationship between colonialism and the English, you know, role in India and the Raj. And so I wonder if there's a connection there. So this is what I loved, all those questions. So you're posing excellent food for thought. And it was, you know, I got to tell you too, what was also fun is that I was able to write for this magazine for the better part of 4 years. And I always loved when I would encounter somebody who was either meeting me for the first time or had read some of mine, and then we would inevitably have this moment of, oh, you're A.V. Crofts, because they didn't really know there wasn't a photograph of me in the magazine. And so it was neat to make that connection with somebody in person.
Yeah, I think it probably added a little bit of an air of mystery. And I think there's so little mystery in the world now in some sense. I think there's plenty of mystery, but I think when you encounter it, it's sort of a bit novel and unique. And
that's right.
You know, I think that was kind of a fun way to approach that. So, and thank you for explaining the history of your I don't know, like a nom de plume, I guess is the right term for that.
Definitely.
Is that the right phrase? So that brings me to the next question. So you've sort of stepped into this food critic and food. We've sort of danced around food a little bit, and I know something that the readers may or may not know, and that is you are an author of a book called Meet Me at the Bamboo Table.
I am. And in fact, it's so exciting that we're talking today, because the book officially released on the 13th this week. I can't even believe it. Yeah. So it's been a very long book in the making, in the sense that I've been working on it diligently for 2 years, but it's exciting to have a chance to talk to you when it really is. This is the week. This is the week we've been waiting for. I mean, it's the books have been shipped. People are now having a chance to read it. So it's thrilling.
It's a fun place to be. I've been there twice. And the first time is, of course, unique because you've never experienced that before, when, you know, the joy of sort of making it past the finish line and exhaustion and handing off the last whatever manuscript or files or whatever. And, you know, now you're in the enjoyment zone in some senses. But of course, now you've got the hustle of having to, you know, promote the book and talk about it, and which is fun, but, you know, it's a different kind of a challenge. So
that's right. There's no rest for the weary. As soon as that galley gets, you know, turned in, you turn to promotion, which is a whole nother beast, but also one that I enjoy, because there's that level of human engagement. And
right.
So while that solitary quest to complete the manuscript, now you get to think about, oh, okay, how do I engage with the audience that I think is going to most enjoy and want to experience this book?
Well, congratulations on achieving, you know, the publication and having it released this week. Like I said, I know how that feels. It's a great feeling. And I just suggest that you enjoy it as long as possible and let that fuel your promotion stuff. But I think what's interesting for us as sketchnoters is sort of your perspective in the book and how you've made use of sketchnoting as one component. So why don't you describe what the book is about and give us some of that context?
Yeah. So the book is a collection of 21 of my essays, and they span 15 different countries. As I've shared already, I am a bit of a traveler. And so when the option or the opportunity was presented to me to create this book, I talked with the publisher about what it might look like, and we were very keen to create that collection of first-person essays that revolved around, and it really emerged, that they were going to revolve around meals that I appreciated and enjoyed across the world and here at home in the United States. And so they also span a pretty broad time range. Even though I've written them all in the last 2 years, the first essay is from when I was a young child in the mid-70s, and it involves summers that I would spend in upstate Wisconsin, which I know is a state dear to you. Mm-hmm. And then the most contemporary essay in the collection of 21 is one that comes from work that I was doing in southern Turkey in 2015. So it really spans a number of decades of my life. And the common denominator has been the way that food brings people together and is a way to express who one is and what one, and an expression of love, as an expression of culture, an expression of identity. And these are both in the meals that are presented to me, but then I think that what I was afforded to do with this book is also discuss who I was when I was 21, who I was when I was 33, who I was when I was 14. So it was a wonderful exercise for me to go back to the vault. I'm the daughter of two historians, and so it was a great chance to review old letters and think about ephemera that I'd collected and put it together in a compilation that isn't just the written essay, but it was very clear from the beginning when talking to my publisher that we wanted it to be very visual. I'm a visual person, and I have been very deeply involved in photography since I was in high school, and that's continued. And so there was a collection of visuals that could be part of it that had the photographic element to it. But I also am someone that more recently has become quite a devotee to sketchnoting, specifically sketchnoting my meals. And what could be more appropriate than incorporating some of those into a work that was going to be looking at the ways in which meals have shaped and changed me over my life. So it was really a great opportunity to have both the written word be a part of it. I mean, that anchors the book for sure, but the visuals are an equally important component of what makes this a piece of work.
That's really fascinating. And I think those two can so fuse together. As we all know, words and images together are quite powerful. And so I think that would be really fascinating to see how each of those generates sort of imagery. And it's interesting too to think about how the imagery that's generated in your mind of this memory, which, you know, maybe you remember it vividly in your memory, and then you're trying to express it in words and in imagery, but it may also generate a different perspective from someone who's reading, you know, for those who are reading it and trying to sort of put themselves in your shoes and empathize with the perspective of where you're coming from. That's a really interesting aspect, I think, of writing and sketchnoting, this combination of word and image together. And I think it could be really fascinating to see what that looks like and how that all fuses together and creates sort of this unified expression.
Yes, I think sketchnotes are at their essence, so invitational. At least I think of them that way. My sketch notes are, yes, they're for me in terms of being a record and an opportunity for me to document an experience that I'm having that is joyful in the moment and that I know will be joyful for me to look at in the way that I render it using a pen and paper. But at the same time, I've also been so pleased at the way that people respond to these sketch notes as well. And the fact that when I say invitational, I mean in the way that a meal, you sit down to a meal, you can also sit down to a sketch note. You get a chance to see how a person visually interprets or documents an experience that they have. And so how am I going to draw this wine glass? What am I going to make this hummus look like? How am I going to create this pizza on a page? What does a cucumber salad look like deconstructed over five different recipe cards, which I just recently did for a friend's wedding shower. It's a wonderful challenge for me. And there's I like to think that one of the elements in the way that I look at sketchnoting food is I try to bring a playfulness to it, because it isn't for me about documenting in such a way where, I mean, I of course I want to have that level of detail, but it's also to capture the emotional resonance of the meal as well. And I guess what I mean by that is the fact that I thoroughly enjoy eating. I just do. I really enjoy sharing food. I enjoy preparing it. I enjoy enjoying, you know, having with other people. And so I want that playful, that invitational, that love to come through in the way that I document a meal. And so that maybe there's a bit of whimsy in terms of, am I looking at the pizza from above, or am I just going to show the mushrooms kind of dancing in the air above it? I mean, those are the choices we get to make in sketchnoting, and I love that fact. There's no right way to do it. The right way to do it is the way you want to do it, and that's what I love about it, is that it's you get to choose.
Yes, it's very flexible and adaptable, which I think is also something very attractive to me about the sketchnoting in general, is it's so adaptable to everyone's different needs. And that's great, I think.
Yeah. And when I'm traveling, or when I'm having a meal in a restaurant, even in my backyard, what I also love, and you said this too, about the fusion of the visuals and the words, is I think meals are they lend themselves to sketch notes, because you have the visual representation of what you're eating, but I have sketch notes from trips I've taken to China, or trips I've taken to Italy, or trips I just mentioned recently that I took to Turkey, where I wouldn't be able to resurrect those dishes off the top of my head. I need those sketch notes to become an anchor for my memories in the future. So it's a chance to have an archival record of what I ate, in a way that we like to imagine that our memory is a vault. And yes, there are things that are always going to be there, but it's also extraordinary to me as I researched and put together my book, how much we forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, when I was writing certain essays, I spent 7 weeks in Vietnam in the early 90s, and I wish I had sketchnoted in the early 90s, because there were meals that I would have loved to have been able to see that I had some letters that described them, but it would have been great if I had been doing the kind of sketchnoting then that I am now. So that really is something, particularly when it comes to the way that I sketchnote what I eat, that I know that I'm banking it for later as well, because I can go back and say to myself, oh wow, that was, what a great meal.
Well, you know, and I feel like food sketch notes and travel sketch notes are quite tied together in lots of ways for me. And I feel like if I travel and I don't do some kind of documentation, which typically is sketchnoting it, the details get mushed together. I don't know which day I did what on. I forget things that I've done. I forget silly things that have happened, like my kids have done, or
sure,
you know, observations. Like, it all seems to get lost. And we feel, I think there's sort of a temptation to think, like, if I take pictures of it, that will solve the problem. But then once you have, you know, 30,000 pictures, how do you dig through that? And then, I mean, it certainly provides one perspective on it, but I think the intentionality, which, coming back to the beginning of the discussion, this intentionality of being aware of all the details and sort of capturing the moment and the magic of these different things meshing. So it's food. Often it's with, you're sitting with someone and you're experiencing it with another person. It's a moment in time that will never come back again. There's environmental, you know, parts of it, like what was the sun like? Was it cold or warm? What was the shop that we were in, or the restaurant, or the backyard? Was there a breeze or not? Were the birds singing? Like, there's so much detail. And you think about, even when you capture all that stuff as deeply as you can with a sketch note, it's still only a fraction of it, and it brings it back to a certain degree. That if it makes you wonder, like, if I don't capture anything, how much am I losing, right? It's right. It almost puts you in that perspective, like, I should be capturing every meal, although I guess maybe not every meal, you know, deserves sketchnoting, but I don't know. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I have a saying that, especially now, it comes out of the digital world we live in now when it comes to photography or when it comes to sketchnoting. We talk about hard drives. And so I say that there are things that just should remain on your hard drive, not your hard drive. And sometimes I say that as a way of letting myself off the hook if I've run out of battery or mm-hmm. Don't have a pen. But I do think that there are moments that we document and there are moments that we don't. And that's fine. And then I was also thinking there are moments we document together. One of my treasured memories of sketchnoting most recently and when it comes to meals is about a year and a half ago, I was visiting my goddaughter and her family in Beijing, and we went out to a restaurant together, and she's 12 years old, and she was really interested in what I was doing with the sketchnoting. And so I said, well, why don't you sketchnote with me? Why don't you also sketch this meal? And it was terrific because it gave her a chance to also experience the meal in a new way. And then it also gave us a chance to compare how we had, how did you draw the teapot? And what did you do with your chopsticks? And how did the dumplings look here? So it's something that you can also share in the moment as well.
Hmm. Yeah, there's so many opportunities, I think, around all of this stuff that allow us to make those moments a little more vivid. And the last comment I would say on this is when I've recorded things, like, so I've been using these Japanese notebooks or diary books called the Hobonichi Techo, which is this little Japanese diary book that my friend Patrick Rohn turned me on to a few years ago. And now I'm sort of hooked on these things. Every September 1st, I'm up late at night ordering mine to make sure I get it. And mine just arrived a few days ago. And what's fascinating, it's a really small book, so it's easy to carry. I had a little leather cover made for it. And what's nice about it is the paper is super duper tough. Like, it's thin. Uh-huh. Like, it's like Bible paper, but it almost nothing bleeds through. There's very few things, like maybe permanent marker might bleed through, but everything else seems to lay on top of it. It may not dry fast, but it won't bleed through to the back page for the most part. And so it's really tough. It's small, so you could take it almost anywhere. And I do tons of sketchnoting. A lot of the football sketchnotes that you may see online are there, or food sketchnotes.
Yes.
Because it's the thing that's, if I'm going to pare everything down and I've got to choose one book, that's probably the one that I would take for a variety of reasons. And what's interesting, so where I'm heading with all this is, I started using this Hobonichi Techo book, I think it was in 2014. And I, at the end of the year, I went back and looked through the book and was really surprised and encouraged by all the little throwaway comments that I thought were stupid at the time or were silly or unimportant. And those often brought back memories of things that I had forgotten about. And provided sort of a depth of that moment that I couldn't have imagined at the time, writing that, I stubbed my toe or something like that, that actually gave a richness to the logbook that I was capturing. And so I'm really aware of, like, writing down silly things or, unusual things. Or if I go back to the book and I find empty pages where I didn't do any writing, like I skipped maybe a couple of days, I'll just do little doodles in there. Because I know that it adds some richness and depth for that later review. So I think even the errant, the funny little things that you did wrong or the mistakes or all that stuff can have value, which I think is really fascinating.
Absolutely. I mean, those are the gems that we are always so happy to be able to unearth, whether it was a month ago or a year ago or 10 years ago. They bring us back into focus they just can place us there in a way that's immediate. And as you say, they may not seem like much at the time when you're documenting them, but they become these touchstones and these portals back to the experience that we had. And they're just so valuable for that reason.
Hmm. Well, I think I want to go a little bit more in detail on maybe one of the stories from the book, maybe at a high level, because obviously it might take a while to read through one of those, but maybe pick one of the stories that you wrote in the sketch notes that you created and give us sort of an idea of what one of the essays in this book might be like and what are the things that you discuss in the essays. So if someone's kind of curious about it, they'd have a sense of what that might be like.
Yeah, well, I'll choose Italy because that's the essay where the sketch notes are included. So I worked very closely with a graphic designer on the layout of the book, and he was just wonderful. Dan of Dandy Design in Seattle, I need to give him a shout out. Dan Schaefer, he's a professor at Cornish College of the Arts and does a lot of work in terms of book layout. And It was a very collaborative relationship when it came to the visual components of the book. And the Italian essay was the one where we really felt that it fit, and it was it was a combination of what I chose to write about Italy and my experience there, and then the fact that I had a real mine, a gold mine of sketches that I'd done during my time there, because it was in 2013. We are very fortunate at the University of Washington to have a Rome Center. There is a beautiful 17th century villa right in the heart of old Rome. We've got a long-term lease on the building. It was a enterprising art history professor back in the late 70s at the University of Washington who negotiated the deal, and it's now become a destination for any number of departments to take undergraduates and graduate students to the Rome Center for quarters of study. And so I was fortunate enough to be part of a faculty team that was taking communication undergraduate students to Rome in 2013. And it came at a wonderful point in my life where I was considering downsizing from a house that I'd owned in Seattle for a long time to a condo, because, as you know, I was splitting my time between Seattle and Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. And so creating a lifestyle where I was able to lock and leave in the summer and head over to Portland was attractive to me. So I was already considering a bit of a change in terms of what I did in Seattle. And did I need a car anymore in Seattle? There were all these opportunities to take public transportation. I'm a big bicyclist. These are the kind of things that were knocking around my brain. And I headed off to Italy. And the essay really takes place on the streets of Rome, which is where I spent my time walking and eating and marveling at the just beauty of the city. It was between January and February, so not necessarily the months that one would assume one would go to Rome and find that kind of joy in the streets, but I just absolutely loved it. And that Mediterranean light and the food, I mean, what could be a more pleasing environment than one where this is a nation that is known for the way that it takes its culinary its culinary prowess is legendary, and it should be. I can tell you that right now. I mean, you just couldn't have a bad meal in that city if you tried. And so here I was in the heart of old Rome with a wonderful collection of students, a treasured colleague, and I was living in an apartment, soaring ceilings, and as you've said earlier, when you're in a new environment, you have those eyes of a traveler. And so I was often out and about, peeking around corners and picking up a piece of pizza or sitting down to a longer meal. And my notebook was my constant companion. And so that was a way for me to have that anchor if you're at a restaurant, or whether you're sharing the meal with somebody or whether you're on your own. Not only was it a place where I could do sketchnoting, but as you said earlier, too, it's a place where you can just note, what am I doing? What am I feeling? And how am I experiencing this new environment? And so in this particular essay on Italy, I talk about what it was like to live in Rome, what it was like to, why I sketchnote meals, why it's important to me, and a couple experiences that I had walking in different parts of not just Rome, but also we were able to travel to other parts of Italy with the group, and how connecting with people over food moved me when I was there. So this is a, I thought it was really suitable. I felt it was a very suitable essay to incorporate the sketch notes because they were a foundational part of my experience of getting to know Italy and navigating it and what it's like to be in a new environment and want to capture that feeling, those moments, because you know that you want to be able to relive that because there's something, that sense of anticipation, possibility, potential, those are really heady emotions that I think are very motivational and you want to be able to bottle it up and have it. And it's funny, but one of my favorite sketches from Rome actually isn't food. And we were at the Vatican and there was this tree that I remember looking at from outside of a museum part of the Vatican we were in. And it was, it's in the book. And now I'm not remembering the actual genus of the tree, but I remember sitting there and I had, even though I typically use moleskins with a much more firm cover, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. When I was in Rome, I would often take out thinner moleskins that were more pocket-sized, easier, even more portable. And I remember just whipping one out and quickly drawing the tree because I loved the way that it looked. And it had almost a Dr. Seussian look to it. It was a little bit spindly and long and had these tufts at the top, but it was very, I just remember looking at it and thinking, I want to be able to, first I want to try to draw this tree. Second, I want to be able to look at this tree when I get back, you know, and I'm no longer in Rome. And it's going to remind me of this moment and where we are. And I did it. And I think that was something too, is just not second guessing yourself and saying, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try to draw this tree. I want to try to capture what's in front of me because, yes, I could have gone for the camera. I probably had my phone on me. Now we were, you know, always with a camera. I remember the days of the clunky multiple lenses and the 20-pound Nikon that you drag around. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, you've always got the opportunity to take a photo, and that can be very good. And there are many photos that show up in my book that I'm grateful that I had the phone on me because you capture something wonderful. But I love the fact that I drew this tree. I just love it. I love looking at it. And I'm so glad that Dan, the graphic designer, included it in the book, because what I did, which was a bit of a leap of faith, is that I actually handed over my journals and sketchbooks from Rome to Dan and said, here you go, take a look and see what moves you, because I really appreciated what he might have to say as someone with that visual sensibility in the layout. And so it was this wonderful experience where I got to see his first draft and see what he had chosen to include. And I was delighted. There were some pasta that I had drawn that was a wonderful story where I'd encountered a woman in this alley and she was making her own pasta. And so I had done some sketches of that. And then he included the tree. And I was so glad he included the tree because I love that tree. But I didn't say to Dan, please include the tree. Mm. But now that it's in the book, I'm really happy that it's there because it even though it was very simple, I shouldn't say it was simple because I felt that sense of, can you do this, Anita? Can you draw this tree? But even though it's just a tree, quote unquote, it's not just a tree to me. It matters to me in a deeper way.
Well, that's really fascinating. And I think I love that story and sort of the depth of the experience that you're describing. And I think this might be there's a couple of good opportunities here. Number one is definitely check out this book. It sounds like it could be quite interesting, particularly for sketchnoters and food lovers, which I think maybe covers everybody on the podcast, maybe. So that's one thing. And I think the second thing, I always try to bring the practical. So what is the practical thing that we can take from these discussions? That's ultimately the goal, is how can we reveal your thinking? And I think my challenge to those who are listening is find a way to sketchnote a meal this week. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. You don't have to show anybody. Just taking the inspiration that Anita has provided for us and how that was meaningful. Maybe it is a meaningful meal. Maybe it's a birthday meal or something like that. Or maybe it's just a little meal at lunch. Maybe instead of looking at your phone and catching up on all the very important updates on Facebook, maybe you actually shut the phone off, bring your notebook along or something, or grab a piece of paper and just capture your lunch and see what that feels like. I think that would be my challenge to the listeners, to maybe give it a shot and see how that changes your perspective.
No, and you got to share them. If they could send them or post them somewhere or hashtag them, I would love to see them.
Yeah. Do you want to come up with a hashtag on the spot? Like, what would be a good hashtag?
Oh, yeah. We need a hashtag here. Let's see. Hashtag.
How about bamboo table?
Bamboo table. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Hash bamboo table. I think it's B-A-M-B-O-O. T-A-B-L-E.
You got it.
So if you do a sketch note after listening to this podcast and you take up the challenge, anything you post with that hashtag bamboo table, we'll put a link to that in a couple of social media in the show notes, and it'll be curious to see over time what shows up with that. And definitely reach out to Anita Verna when you do that so she can see what you're doing and get into a discussion with you. And we'll, at the end of the show, we'll of course let you know all the places you can reach out to her and see, find her book and all that stuff. So now let's get into the part that many listeners like the most. Of course, they like the whole podcast quite a bit, but the tools discussion. So we're really curious. It seems like there's always curiosity around what are the tools that you like to use? Do you use analog and digital? And if so, what are those specific tools so people can maybe experience something new, give something different a try that maybe they haven't used before. So I'm going to start with analog, and I don't know if you do digital, but if you do, then just proceed right into the digital after your analog tool description is done.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm definitely analog when it comes to, I've got my Uniball pen in one hand and I'm holding the reporter's Moleskine notebook in the other. I use lined notebooks. So I think that they're about maybe 5 by 4 or 6 by 4 inches, that kind of thing. So definitely still pocket, and it's got that wonderful elastic band, so it closes shut. There's that wonderful pocket in the back too, so I can slip a little those things you collect as you're moving through the world. You've got your little ticket, you've got those little movie passes, things like that. But where digital comes in for me, Mike, is that I use digital when I am sketchnoting to look up things. Like if I'm at a talk and there's a discussion about strength and I'm looking to find somebody's arm making a muscle, I will then have my phone next to me so that I can go for some of those visual cues that will help me then sketch. So I remember being at a talk once and Yoda was referenced, and I thought, oh, I really want to be able to sketch Yoda, but how can I then take what I have in my hand, my phone and my pen and my Moleskine notebook, but the phone becomes a chance for me to do that research and to look and see and get those visual cues that then help me in the moment, especially if it's a time sensitive thing where I'm listening to a talk and I'm trying to move things through. It allows me to have that. It's like having a digital library in my hand, a visual digital library. So I work, they're not always in concert. That more typically is when I'm sketchnoting something that I'm listening to in the form of a talk. When I'm at a meal, the digital becomes how I might document it for photographs, and then if I wanted to fill in the sketch note later. But in general, for food, I'm doing it with a pen and the Moleskine. And as I said, when I'm traveling, sometimes I will go for that soft-sided, really pocket one, because it allows me to be even more flexible and nimble with it.
Interesting. So I've just discovered, I don't know if you know this, but Field Notes has just released, I think it's a limited edition. It's called the Reporter. I think it's called the Reporter. And it's a sort of a long, tall, lined notebook. It's got beautiful paper in there, and it's interesting because it flaps over, so it's spiral bound, and it's got a flap that sort of holds it all together so you can stick it in your pocket, and they're really fun. I got one just on a whim. I think it was one of the companies said, hey, would you be curious to try one of these and maybe do a little review? So I actually did a review as a sketch note, and the Field Notes guys, who I know down in Chicago, actually found it and have put it up on their site for that notebook. So it actually was quite fun, and I found it pretty useful, more than I thought it would be. So I can appreciate your love of the reporter style notebook going vertically that way.
No, I really enjoy the vertical, but that sounds like a neat product. I definitely want to check that out. And I was just thinking though, even though I don't use it habitually in what I would call sketchnoting. I am a real devotee of using my iPad and the sketchbook app for doing, like, for instance, I as someone who's often in front of the classroom, I try to incorporate a lot of my sketches in the way that I put together a slide deck, for instance. And so I found that the iPad, I don't have an iPad Pro yet, but I know people that do, and they are beautiful, beautiful devices, I will say that. But I've been thoroughly enjoying having the iPad as a way that I can, either with my finger, sometimes with a stylus, but I tend to enjoy using my finger, use the Sketchbook Pro or Sketchbook app and put together images that I really enjoy. They become my visual hallmark as an educator, as someone who's in front of the, as I said, like my classes, whether it's the decks that I create or then I incorporate that imagery through the online portal that the students use for the course. That's a way that I take a visual and I thread it through the class. So that's something that I really enjoyed. And it's a different feel to move your finger across a screen than it is to take a pen and move it across paper. But I really enjoy the interplay of taking the screen, doing the fill, having the ability to create a nice thick line on a screen. Really, really fun. And in fact, in preparation for the book, I created maps on the iPad with my finger, using for all the countries that are represented in Meet Me in the Bamboo Table. And so that was a way that I was able to have a digital component that made its way into the book in the form of these sketched maps that I did using the iPad.
Interesting. So what was the tool that you specifically are using on the iPad to do that work?
It's called Sketchbook.
Okay.
It's Sketchbook Pro, and it's by Autodesk.
Got it. Yes, I think Todd Clark, who was just on a recent episode, is a big fan of that tool. I think it's got like a circular control for managing the tools, if I remember properly.
It does. And it's got lots of functionality. You can remember different thicknesses. It has wonderful ability to add certain textures that I really like. I really like experimenting with the textures. And because I take so many photographs as well, I like layering them often with text that I write on top, or adding graphics to the photograph. That's something I've really enjoyed experimenting with over the last couple of years, is creating slide decks where I'll have a photo that I drop into Sketchbook Pro, and then I will use the functionality, like the, as you said, the circular tool, and add either my writing over top, or I will add a sketch to it. And that's a look that I really like.
Almost like a digital collage in some senses.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And it sounds like you're a lot like me in the sense that I'm not going to give up pen and paper. It works really well for me, and there's lots of advantages to it. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Just because I love pen and paper doesn't mean I can't also love what digital can do. And in many cases, the iPad Pro provides an extension that paper can't in some ways, you know, undos and layering and drawing on top of imagery and all those kind of things. But also portability and sort of some power in certain cases that can be really useful. So it sounds like that's the sense I'm getting from you, is that they sort of complement each other instead of replace each other.
Oh, very much. They absolutely complement each other, and they allow, as you say, the ability to, I can take something that I've created on the iPad Pro, I can share it with somebody instantly. I can always take, of course, what I do with just my hand and on a piece of paper and take a photograph and share it as well. And I enjoy that distribution challenge too. But to me, it's they complement, they inform one another. There are advantages in different situations where you're happy to have the notebook, where you're happy to have the iPad, where you're happy to have a phone that allows you to confirm something, to check on something, to take that photograph so you can fill it in later. It's an entire toolkit, and it's a matter of using the right one in the right moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree, and I think once you start playing with the iPad Pro, I think you'll probably have a lot of fun, especially with the pencil. I know I've made the comment even, I think, last week that the iPad Pro has been one of the best investments I've made in technology, and it's actually what I'd hoped the iPad was going to be in 2010, and it just was just not quite ready for that level yet.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I realize that with just an iPad, I am woefully behind the eight ball in terms of what the possibilities are. And so it's probably just a matter of time.
Well, and I would say, too, that sort of the work that has been done on the iPad and how far that was pushed. And I would say the Paper 53 guys, again, with the software that they've created, and then also the hardware, the pencil that they offer, and many of the styluses. So there were many who've produced Bluetooth styluses and tried to achieve, you know, pressure and other things. The level that it got to prior to the Apple Pencil is pretty remarkable, considering the technology limitation that was in place. So now having the pencil and that kind of resolution sort of opens up doors to new things. Just this week, so I work at a company, and they had a hackathon that's going on in October, and there was an idea that won that was called Hacktoberfest. And so I did like a beer stein and Bavarian checkers and fall leaves, and I drew the whole thing in Paper by 53 in my iPad Pro, and then exported it, brought it into Photoshop, up-resed it, and sort of did some cleanup and tweaking, and that actually produced the sticker that people are going to be putting on their laptops, and it turned out just fantastic. It's kind of crazy that nothing was ever drawn on paper. It just went right from the iPad right to stickers, more or less. And so, you know, when you see those kind of things happen, it just encourages me that it's a great tool. And, you know, it doesn't solve every problem, but it certainly solves problems before that were more complex to do with a more analog, or even with a, I guess you could have done that with a Wacom Cintiq or another Wacom tablet in a similar way. But the immediacy, being able to walk, you know, go to a cafe with an iPad and draw this thing out in full color and this kind of detail is just kind of revolutionary in some senses. And it snuck up on me. So it may sneak up on you too. We'll see.
Well, it sounds dazzling. That example you just gave, I love it.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. So, so be careful around Christmas time, you know, stay away from the Apple Store. Don't play on the iPad with a pencil. And your hardest decision will be, do you want to go giant size or baby size? I'm more of the iPad Pro baby size. The 9.7 really fits me well. But I know lots of people who have been on the show and have listened to the show really like the 12.9. So I guess it kind of depends on what you're going to do with it. But definitely, you know, good feedback on that tool.
Well, duly noted. I will keep you in the loop in terms of what happens as the year unfolds.
That would be great. And so what we're going to do now is, as we near the end of the show, this is a feature that we've been doing, and I find it really valuable. And that is to have guests give three tips or ideas for sketchnoters about sketchnoting. It can be, you know, strategy for sketchnoting. It can be actual tips like do this or try this, or even ideas in general. So anything related to visual thinking and sketchnoting that will help listeners apply this today. So I love the practical. How can we find things that immediately apply today that can make sketchnoters' lives better? So with that, why don't you just sort of ruminate on maybe three ideas that that maybe would make sense for you that you could share?
Well, when I was telling you the story about the tree in Rome, I think there's something to be said for don't judge yourself in the moment. And this is something that I tell my students when they're presenting work in a class. I don't believe in disclaimers. I don't want someone to come up in front of the class and tell me how it was the first video they've ever made. I don't want someone to put down a meal in front of me and say, this is the first time I've ever made this recipe, and I'm really sorry it did not turn out the way I thought it was going to be. No, just feed me, just put it down. I'm never going to know how it's supposed to be. And just put that pen down to paper. Don't let yourself censor yourself and start judging yourself before you've even had a chance to put it down, because it really, you're going to draw the tree that you're supposed to draw in Rome in that moment. And so that's, I don't know exactly how I would define what I'm saying here right now, but that idea of going boldly and not judging yourself in the moment, and knowing that if you continue to allow yourself that freedom and that flexibility, you're going to get better. You're going to start drawing more trees. You're going to start drawing, and you're going to feel more comfortable with the way, and you're going to find it's like building your voice as a writer. You're going to build yourself as a visual artist. If you don't limit yourself to those voices in your head that say, well, you can't draw that, or you can't do that, or you've never done that before. No. Start. Be bold. Go. Do it. No disclaimers. So that's the first thing I would say. I've already referenced this, but I'll bring it back, that I use my phone as a digital library. If you're getting stuck, if you can't remember what Yoda looks like, if you want to know when somebody was born, if there's an important data point that you want to get into that sketch note, especially if it's time sensitive, the phone is a remarkable tool when it comes to being able to be additive to the sketch note experience. So I see that as a true, and this really maps to even larger conversations that I have with my students about the interplay of online and offline. I mean, mm-hmm. we live in worlds where the blurring of online and offline communities, the blurring of online and offline tools, as we were talking about just in the tool section, it's not an either or, it's a blend. And so for me, being able to see that phone as a resource in the moment is wonderful. And it's been an excellent part for me in terms of how I use that device in a way that serves, in some cases, a sketch note. Now, this isn't always the case. I mean, one of the things that we've talked about in this podcast has been how I've enjoyed just the pure analog experience of a pen and a small notebook and a remote road in some neighborhood or country or environment that I've not been in before. And so you want to, I guess that would be my third piece of advice, is travel lightly now and again. Just allow your, maybe you don't even have your notebook with you. Turn over that receipt at the restaurant and just draw it. Draw it on that. It doesn't have to be in your official sketchbook Moleskine. Some of my favorite moments have been when I've just taken what's at hand and had a chance to capture something that's in my mind that I want to get down on in some visual way. So to be inventive and resourceful would be my third piece of advice, and know that that whatever is in front of you is something that you can use to create a visual memory for yourself.
Wow, those are fantastic. I really, really encourage.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, I think any kind of encouragement about confidence and just going for it. I think more and more, I just feel like practicing this activity. This is a practice that we're doing, and the only way to get better at it is to do it. So
that's right.
Those are really encouraging words for me, even to remember. To work within those limitations. Like if my notebook's not here, then grab the receipt or the back of the brochure or something like that and really go for it. So thank you for sharing that wisdom and those encouraging words of practical application that we can all, you know, bring into our practices going forward. So thanks so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
And now I think we will wrap up the show, and I think it's really important that people can reach out to you. So why don't you tell us the best places that people can, reach out and say hello? Where are you most active on social media? Their websites that we can go check out? Any of those things would be great for people to be able to research and find you.
Yes. Well, one of the beauties of publishing under the name A.V. Crofts is that becomes my handle. that is where you'll find me on Twitter. That is where you will find me on Instagram, A-V-C-R-O-F-T-S. You will find me as Anita Verna Crofts on Facebook. I'm active in all three of those platforms. And you can also find me two places online in terms of a website landing page. The site that really is my one devoted to food and writing and the book is called pepperforthebeast.com. I'll say that again, pepperforthebeast.com. And that's got a wonderful interactive map that'll take you into some of the different countries where the book takes place. And it also has a blog that I've kept for years looking at food and identity and also lots of good excerpts from pieces that I've done in the past on food and writing. So that's a great place to go. And then that is also attached. You'll see if you go to Pepper for the Beast, there's a main website that's part of that menu item that again is my published name, avcrofts.com. So that's another place that you can go to that'll have more information about the work that I do at the University of Washington, the kind of beliefs that I have about the way that we involve ourselves in classrooms. And then you can also find me, as you know, on Flickr as Anita Notations, AnitaNotations. And so that's where I've got a number of my sketch notes up. And I'm going to be putting up more, now that the book's out, that document some of the ones that are actually in the Meet Me at the Bamboo Table book.
Cool. And I was tempted to help you with that notation spelling, but I'm like the wrong person for that. So I just stepped away from the mic.
No, I think I made it through. But thank you. There are times you just got to step away, Mike, and just let someone work it out for themselves.
Yeah.
And I will also, I'm always happy to get emails, and avcrofts@gmail.com is the best way to reach me.
Cool. That's maybe the most extensive list of places for any of the guests so far. So,
well, I don't teach in a digital media program for nothing.
That's right. Yeah, you're on top of it. So, well, thank you so much for making this time. This has been really fantastic. I've learned so much about you, and you've made me think a lot about the impact of sketchnoting food and travel, and how much maybe you've helped me get to the roots of why I love it so much and why it's so important to me. And it's also challenged me to think about how I do it. I used to be better at doing it when I would go to lunch and just do it every day. And I think I've sort of fallen away from that. So this is kind of an encouraging thing for me to step it up and start doing it again. So definitely, if you have been inspired by doing sketchnoting for food in any way, shape, or form, use that hashtag again. It's hashtag bamboo table. We'd love to see what stuff you guys come up with. And I know that Anita would love to interact with you and have discussions. So definitely reach out and say hello. And thanks so much for being on the show, Anita.
Oh, Mike, the pleasure is all mine. I can't thank you enough for what you've done for sketchnoting, for elevating the profile, for encouraging so many of us, and to be here with you and have the chance to have a conversation is really a dream come true. So thanks so much for having me.
Cool. Well, we will wrap the show up with that. And if you love the show, the best thing you can do is there's two things. One is to rate it on iTunes. Those iTunes ratings, definitely put it up in the ratings and help other people find it who may not know about our community but are curious about what sketchnotes are. And then the second thing to do is to sponsor the efforts that I'm doing is just pick up copies of my book. And if you've got copies, give them away. And that all helps sponsor these podcasts. So thanks again for being with us today. And we will see you on the next episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast.